in Hong Kong. Via remote, I'm Joe Palca, and this is VOA News.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
I don't know how we're going to get treated. We're at the hospital and there are no nurses.
That's Innocent Mbizi, who was seeking medical attention at Zimbabwe's biggest medical center during the month-long nurses' strike. Details coming up also. Protesters in Kenya today tried to march to the center of Nairobi, accusing police of brutality during the pandemic lockdown. And surging coronavirus infections is forcing Saudi Arabia to restrict the annual Hajj pilgrimage to a smaller event this year. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. With little progress in negotiations to end a nearly month-old nurses' strike in Zimbabwe, patients are feeling the effects. Amid a lengthy economic crisis that has seen the local currency plunge and prices skyrocket, the nurses want a review of their salaries. And with Zimbabwe's economy largely readapting use of the U.S. dollar, nurses want their salaries in the American currency. Reporter Kudzai Zanwashi has the details.
Nurses have been staging demonstrations at their workplaces across the country, calling for their salaries to be paid in U.S. dollars in light of the growing demand of the currency after government gave up on its effort to de-dollarize the economy. A protest by nurses yesterday in Harare ended with 13 nurses getting arrested. Enoch Dongo, president of the Zimbabwe Nurses Association, or ZINA, said they were expected to appear in court later today. As with an earlier strike by doctors, patients are caught in the middle. Innocent Mbizi has been seeking medical attention at Zimbabwe's biggest medical center, Parere Nyathwa Hospital.
I don't know how we're going to get treated. We're at the hospital and there are no nurses.
Mbizi says doctors are overwhelmed with duties that normally nurses would handle.
The doctor is taking care of the paperwork, they're taking care of for the administering of medication, they're taking care of everything. So it becomes a problem to us patients because we'll be here at the hospital for the whole day.
Dongo said the arrest of nurses will not put a damper on their call for their salaries in US dollars, with protests across the country in solidarity with them. Talks between nurses and government have not had much success. Dongo says in June, nurses earned equivalent of just 30 US dollars. He says a 50% increase announced by government is too little if weighed against the costs of basic necessities like food, transport, and housing. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
Protesters in Kenya, galvanized by mounting accusations of police brutality during the pandemic lockdown, tried to march today from their homes to the center of the capital, Nairobi, but many were dispersed or arrested. Reuters reports that police fired tear gas and arrested activists gathering for the march. Michael Injao, an activist at the Kiamaiko Justice Center, says police have been killing a lot of people during the lockdown and that it has gotten worse. Rights groups Amnesty International says Kenyan police have killed at least 100 people this year, with 21 related to COVID-19 infractions such as curfew or mask violations. In April, President Uhuru Kenyatta said that there had been some challenges in the initial stages of the lockdown and apologized to all Kenyans for some excesses that resulted. The UN Security Council has unanimously passed a resolution demanding an immediate end to hostilities in conflict zones around the world. Unlike resolutions of the UN General Assembly, resolutions of the UNSC are legally binding. However, only a few days after the UNSC resolution was adopted, 9 airstrikes in Libya destroyed a Turkish air defense system at Al-Watiya Air Base that was recently taken by forces loyal to the Government of National Accord. VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shenawi spoke with Wolfgang Parshtai, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, about the potential impact of the UNSC resolution on the conflict in Libya.
I would say this could be, theoretically, an opportunity to get things really moving towards a ceasefire. This could be a face-saving way for both sides to agree to a ceasefire without giving in to the other side, as this is about Corona and not about any kind of capitulation to the others. The Speaker of the Foreign Affairs Committee of the House of Representatives has already welcomed the resolution, but for the time being, there is no official statement from the Libyan National Army or the Government of National Accord. The GNA still insists on the withdrawal of the Libyan National Army from the Sirte Basin, but there is no indication that the LNA will agree to do so. I think we will see in the next days if this UN Security Council resolution really is about to change things or not.
Only a few days after the UN Security Council resolution was issued, 9 airstrikes destroyed the Turkish air defense system at Al-Watiya Air Base that was liberated by forces loyal to the Government of National Accord. What do you make of that?
Al-Watiya has no real short-term impact on the civil war in Libya, as it would have taken months anyway to get the base operational. So maybe at the best, it would have been the case in fall or early next year. But the base would certainly have a huge impact in the midterm after it is completed and operational. An impact not only within Libya, but also in the whole region. The base would allow for the deployment not only of drones, they are present in Libya anyway, but also of Turkish F-16 fighter jets and transport aircraft. And the Libyan National Army Air Force MiG and Sukhoi jets are no match for the Turkish F-16s. The Turks would certainly enjoy full air superiority over Libya and they could strike anywhere at their will, if no outside nation would intervene. The transport aircraft would help Turkey to spread its influence all over the Sahara region. But as a next step, before starting to rebuild or trying to rebuild the base again, Turkey needs to deploy a more efficient air defense system, if they have one.
The two warring sides in Libya are still mobilizing for a decisive battle in Sirte, which both Egypt and Russia said it is a red line not to be crossed by the GNA forces, while Turkey seemed inclined to expand its intervention in Libya. What could that lead to?
It is very, very likely that Egypt would intervene fully with its mighty air force, which is equipped with top modern French Rafale jets and certainly with those jets superior to the Turkish air force. For the time being, there are no Turkish fighter jets based in Libya, and any additional deployments or sustainment of the forces already in Libya would become even more challenging if Egypt has joined the war, because any ship from Turkey or aircraft must pass close by to Egypt, and those ships or aircraft could be intercepted at ease. While Egypt could conduct its own air campaign from its home bases, they would not need to deploy to Libya. However, right now, many in Turkey and many within Operation Volcano, especially those who are Islamist leaning, still believe that Egypt will stay out of the fight even if they attack Sirte. It needs to be seen who is correct.
The U.S. State Department warned the Libyan National Army that its affiliation with the Wagner Group, a Russian military defense proxy, and preparation of the oil shutdown contradict the interests of the U.S. and the Libyan interests. What's your reading of that statement?
Actually, there is nothing really new in this. This is the U.S. position towards the involvement of the Russians in Libya always. The U.S. is firmly against any Russian involvement in Libya, because they fear that it will lead to a sustained, to a permanent presence of the Russians in the country. And although the Russian influence on the ground is vastly exaggerated, such a permanent presence could nevertheless very well become the case. The Russians are interested in having a Navy base there, a Navy base for the aircraft carrier, which is by far too big for the Navy base they have already in Syria. And they're also interested in an Air Force base. But let me clarify, most important for the Libyan National Army is the Russian technical support and the recent delivery of fighter jets, which helped to stabilize the situation for the LNA. So right now, the significance of the Russians for the Libyan National Army is increasing. if the Turks and Operational Volcano start their offensive on Sirte, the LNA will need the support of the Egyptians to rescue them anyway, because the Russian MiGs and Sukhois won't be enough. The United States are talking actually with both sides in Libya. The best solution right now would be to mediate a ceasefire in the Sirte region and send some peacekeeping troops to secure some kind of a buffer zone there. This could be a task for someone who is working on both sides in Libya, namely for the Europeans.
That was Wolfgang Pochtei, a former Austrian military attaché in Libya, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi. Gunmen ambushed a convoy in northern Burkina Faso on Monday, killing at least 8 people, including 5 soldiers and a town mayor. VOA's Bambara service reports among those killed was Pensa Mayor Suleiman Zabre, while 3 others in his vehicle are missing, according to security officials. South Africa continues to experience an upsurge in crime now that the government has ended a hard lockdown aimed at slowing the spread of COVID-19. As infections are peaking across the nation, the state is being criticized for putting most of its resources into battling the coronavirus instead of also funding projects to keep South Africans safe. From Johannesburg, Darren Taylor has more.
There shall be no space of criminals in this community anymore. There shall be no oxygen wasted on criminals. We'll squeeze them.
South Africa's police minister, Becky Teller, is known for wearing fancy, sometimes gaudy, fedora hats. His fiery speeches and the clouds of alleged corruption that hang over him. Opposition parties often say he's to blame for the country's high crime rates. They say Tele places incompetent friends in high positions in the police. Lately, they've attacked Tele for withdrawing funding from community security groups that often fill the gaps left by the short-staffed police service. Andrew Whitfield is Shadow Minister of Police for the official opposition party, the Democratic Alliance, or DA.
Nobody has done more to destroy public confidence and trust in the police than the Minister of Police himself. The decision to ban community policing structures across the country has made communities increasingly vulnerable to criminal elements, and nowhere is that more true than in our rural communities and on our farms, who rely on these structures and their working relationship with the South African Police Service.
Farmers who've come under increasing attack from criminals in recent weeks are outraged that Tele wants to ban private ownership of firearms. The minister says his bill will prevent gun crime.
It would be better when the ordinary citizens of South Africa are not armed, as you would find in other countries like your South Korea, like your Japan, that only the armed forces carry those firearms.
But crime experts have pointed out that South Africa cannot be compared with South Korea and Japan. There, they say, crime rates are very low, the police are effective, and there aren't thousands of gun-toting criminals. Whitfield says farmers are as good as dead if Tele takes away their firearms.
The minister's comments about gun ownership, firearm licenses, training, and farm patrols have undermined rural security in South Africa.
Whitfield wants the government to reintroduce the police squads that, up until the COVID-19 pandemic, had cooperated with Farm Watch security groups.
And we will be again pushing for the establishment of these fully outfitted specialized units dedicated to protecting our rural communities and apprehending any attackers who get onto a farm, small holding, or rural community to attack, steal, and torture.
The DA is asking the state to appoint skilled police officers to specifically investigate farm attacks.
We will also be asking for increased police presence and the utilization of every available technology when tracking perpetrators. If canine units are not available, drones should be.
The South African Police Service, or SAPS, has budgeted for 10 drone units in rural areas, but has so far this year failed to deploy a single one.
No CCTV sites out of 129 annual target were delivered. So the use of technology is clearly not a priority in SAPS, and I believe that this emanates from a lack of political will to protect our rural communities and our farmers in particular.
The government's stance is that rural districts and farmers don't deserve special treatment and that it will strive to protect them, just as it would any other community. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Surging coronavirus infections are forcing Saudi Arabia to restrict the annual Hajj pilgrimage to a smaller event in accordance with safety guidelines. The country has one of the highest coronavirus infection rates in the Middle East, with more than 213,000 confirmed cases and nearly 2,000 deaths. The Saudis are permitting a very limited Hajj pilgrimage at the end of this month, compared with the more than 2 million pilgrims from 180 countries who normally participate. No one who is not already inside Saudi Arabia is allowed to enter the kingdom for the pilgrimage. Between 25 and 30% of the private sector's income in the Mecca and Medina areas rely heavily on the pilgrimage season. In normal times, analysts estimate that the pilgrimages comprise $12 billion, about 7% of Saudi Arabia's annual GDP. Cameroonian rights and press groups are alleging a military cover-up in the death of journalist Samuel Wazizi after the military on Monday refused to hand over his body to the family. Cameroon's military in June admitted Wazizi had died at the military hospital in August last year after months of silence on his whereabouts or condition. Supporters of Wazizi, who was arrested for allegedly collaborating with Anglophone rebels, have accused the military of torturing him to death, a charge they deny. Moki Edwin Kenseka reports from Yaoundé.
Spokesman for Cameroon's military, Serge Cyril Atongfak, says they will not hand over the body of journalist Samuel Wazizi to his family anytime soon.
La famille n'a rien entrepris en 10 mois pour récupérer le corps. Malheureusement, aujourd'hui, elle ne le peut plus parce que...
Atongfak says no family member or lawyer can have access to Wazizi's body now because it has been sealed. He says the body was sealed to allow investigators to determine the cause of death as ordered by Cameroon's President Paul Biya. Before Biya ordered the investigation, says Atongfak, Wazizi's family had 10 months to remove the journalist's body from the mortuary, but they refused. Wazizi's family member and spokesman Tar Jarvis rejects Atongfak's claim, which conflicts with the public record. He notes the family had been seeking the journalist's whereabouts since his arrest and disappearance last August when they filed a complaint, but authorities did not respond. The military, under public pressure in June, finally admitted that Wazizi had died at the military hospital just days after his arrest. Jarvis says the family immediately went to court.
The family filed a case in court for the court to actually grant that Wazizi's body be handed over to the family or be brought to Buya. The person who actually kept the corpse in the mortuary is the government. And till now, the government has not contacted the family officially.
French Ambassador to Cameroon Christophe Guihou said President Biya in a June 5 meeting promised an investigation to determine the cause of Wazizi's death. Family members, their lawyers and colleagues accuse the military of torturing and killing Wazizi, a charge the military denies. President of the National Trade Union of Cameroon's journalists, Denis Kwebo, says the military's months of silence and refusal to hand over the body is clearly a cover-up.
Le gouvernement confisque le corps de Samuel Wazizi pour éviter qu'on ait la preuve des sévices.
He says the government confiscated the body of Samuel Wazizi to hide evidence of torture the journalist underwent before the military killed him. Journalists are reiterating that a national independent commission should be set up, says Kwebo, to investigate what killed Samuel Wazizi. Wazizi was a presenter for Chilean Media Television based in the southwestern town of Buea. Cameroon's military arrested Wazizi in Buea for allegedly supporting Anglophone rebels who want independence from the French-speaking majority. Cameroon's four-year separatist conflict in its western regions has displaced more than 500,000 and left over 3,000 people dead. Rights groups have accused both sides of committing atrocities in the conflict, including abductions and murders of civilians. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Uganda's wildlife authorities say the halt to tourism income caused by COVID-19 has pushed many people who depended on tourists into poaching the very animals the industry depends on. Uganda's national parks recorded a doubling of wildlife poaching during the pandemic compared to this time last year. Uganda's conservationists are looking for alternative income sources for the communities to stop the poaching. Halima Tumani reports from Kampala.
Between February and June of this year, the Uganda Wildlife Authority recorded 367 poaching cases across the country, more than double the 163 cases recorded during a similar period in 2019. John Makombo, the Uganda Wildlife Authority Director for Conservation, attributes the increase to the COVID-19 lockdown, lost income for people who work in the tourism industry, and inadequate human resources to cover all the conservation areas. Tourism is usually Uganda's leading foreign exchange earner, reaping $1.6 billion in the 2018-2019 financial year alone. But with the closure of the tourism sector due to COVID-19, Makombo says the tourism sector is not taking in any money, making the national parks vulnerable to poachers.
That loss of benefit has led to job loss and unemployment of many stakeholders. Some of the jobless community members have turned their spears against the wildlife as poachers.
The most recent incident was the killing of Rafiki, a beloved silverback gorilla in the windy, impenetrable national park in southwestern Uganda. Gladys Karemazikusoka is founder and chief of conservation through Public Health, a non-profit wildlife group. She says most gorilla killings are accidental, but killings of other animals are not.
They set snares for other animals that they want to eat, like a small antelope or a bush pig. They'll go for those to eat them. And when they set these snares, gorillas can accidentally get caught in the snares. But worse still, we've had cases of people spearing gorillas, yet they were not going for gorillas, they were going for duiker and bush pig.
According to Uganda's Tourism Act, 20% of all revenue collected in national parks is directed to local communities, including $10 of all permits from Windy Impenetrable National Park. In the current circumstances, however, that money has dried up. Kalima says to cut down on poaching, her organization and the Uganda Wildlife Authority have started an enterprise where farmers are given an above-market price for their coffee.
These are farmers who we engage that they don't have to go into the park to poach to be able to feed their families. We're encouraging them. We're trying to see how to get them seedlings for fast-growing foods so that they can at least eat. They're not starving while they wait for tourism to come back. These local communities, I think, they can coexist with wildlife, but if they're hungry, it's very difficult for them to coexist.
According to the Uganda Wildlife Authority, wildlife in Kidepo, Lake Mburo, Makshon Falls, and Winnie Impenetrable National Parks remain vulnerable despite efforts to enhance patrols around protected areas. The authority is ensuring its rangers spend more time with the gorillas, which are the main attraction in the parks, to lessen the chance that they could wander off and be poached. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala, Uganda.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyu Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, thanks for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA.